What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.
Hey, everyone. It's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
You're in the madhouse now.
You are listening to The Overwhelmed Brain. Today's episode is brought to you by Storyworth. This is a treasure that will show someone special in your life just how special they are. Go to storyworth.com/brain and get $20 off the gift of their life.
I'll take two.
Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani, personal empowerment coach and host of this show that I call The Overwhelmed Brain. And this is the personal growth show for the critical thinker. On every episode, we'll talk about practical, down-to-earth steps to help you improve your mood and keep you sane in this powerful journey we call life. I want to help you bridge the gap between your emotions and reason, causing you to discover why you do the things you do and what you can do to reach higher levels of happiness and lower levels of stress and overwhelm. Everything I talk about on this show should not be mistaken for actual medical advice or treatment and is intended to be for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your medical treatment. And aside from all that disclaimer stuff, what you will find here is an increase in your emotional intelligence, a strengthening of your self-worth and self-esteem, the motivation to be your authentic self, and the forward momentum to help you learn, heal, grow, and evolve. All right, first segment. We're going to get into something that might be a little hard for you to hear or listen to, especially if you're in a relationship and you're not sure what's going on in your relationship. Like, do I want to stick around? Do I want this relationship to work out? Am I fully invested in this relationship? Do I want to invest more time and energy and maybe even money into this relationship? Or is it time to call it quits? That's a good question. I think many of my relationships, it was probably time to call it quits much earlier than it ended. And I never did that. I never called it quits. I wanted the relationship to last regardless of dysfunction, regardless of the problems that it had, regardless of how I felt. Like, I might go every day feeling like this relationship could be so much more, but I'm going to stick it out because I'm loyal. I'm dedicated. I would never leave this person, even though both of us may be unhappy. Of course, I wouldn't know if they were unhappy. I just tried harder and tried harder to make them happy. I was always doing what I could to make my partner happy. What can I do for you now? What can I do for you now? I'm a person of service. I'm always trying to show them that I love them in every way possible, instead of express how I really feel or honor myself when they have needs and I haven't even met my own needs. And there were times when the relationships that I was in got, I don't want to say stale, but affected. They became a little more dysfunctional, a little less happy, a little less emotionally connected. I mean, I remember one relationship I had where I just turn into an analytical machine because connecting with my emotions meant connecting with the part of me that wasn't happy. Have you ever felt that way? Connecting with a part of yourself that isn't happy, so you decide to turn into an analytical robot and just go through the motions every day. And hopefully the other person decides to leave. I had thoughts of like, what would happen if the other person left? Would I be happier? And so, you know, my mom did this for 40 years with my stepfather. She's like, I'm just waiting for the day he leaves. I'm just waiting until he leaves so I can be happy. And of course, the rest of the family is like, Mom, why don't you just leave? Why don't you just call it quits? I mean, they didn't use that terminology, but that's what I'm talking about today in this segment is, when is it time to call it quits? At what point do you go, this isn't working. We need to do something different. Now, that doesn't mean you just have to end it. That means you talk about it. That means you go, hey, this isn't working. Let's go to counseling. Let's listen to the overwhelmed brain. Let's do something different, because what we're doing now isn't working. Because I'm unhappy and you're unhappy, or one of us is unhappy and you're thrilled. You know, that happens too. You have one person that's very unhappy and the other person that's absolutely fine. Nothing wrong with that person. Nothing wrong on that side. But all the stress and emotional pain and maybe some emotional wounds caused by some of the stuff that happened in the relationship, or even from past relationships or childhood, all these emotional wounds that are flaring up, and now you're in pain and the other person's happy, or you're happy and the other person's in pain, or a combination of, you know, so many complex variables here. It could go a multitude of ways. But what I want to do is I'm going to read you a list of 20 items that you can compare or evaluate next to your relationship, or, you know, past relationships, or think about for future relationships. This is all about, at what point do we need help? Because I think that's the first place you should go in a relationship when things are going wrong. You should find some sort of help. And that can start with each other. I mean, you can say, I want to help our relationship somehow. You wouldn't necessarily say that to your partner. You just say that inside you. You go, this relationship isn't working. There's something missing. There's something wrong with it. There's a problem. There's a challenge. So something needs to change. Because let me ask you a question. Regardless if you're in a relationship or not now, think of a relationship that you've had where it ended way too late. Like it should have ended a year ago. It should have ended 10 years ago, whatever. And then it finally ended. And even though it might have been painful or a lot of challenges came up because of it, think of a relationship that you've had or the one that you're in now and ask yourself this question. If we're together for the rest of our lives and this is the way it's going to be the whole time, will that be okay with me? I mean, that's a good question, right? If the way our relationship is today is going to be the way it is from this point on until we're dead, if you want to be blunt, will that be okay with me? Because if the answer is no, then you may need to do something about it, because you don't want to live your life every day doing something you don't like. You don't want to be with someone that you're having problems with every day or most of the time. So answer that question and be honest. If this is the way it is for the rest of my life, will it be okay? If the answer is no, then I think it's time to talk about it, do something about it, get help in some way. So now that you've answered that question, and again, this could be regarding a previous relationship, or you can take this with you into a future relationship. So when you get into it, you can ask yourself that question every now and then. If this is the way it is every day from this point on, will it be okay? Now, you could have a bad day. If today is a bad day, you had an argument and everything's been going well, don't compare this day to every other day. You want to look at a pattern. You know, the pattern of the past few weeks, few months, few years. Has that pattern been a productive, happy, healthy, progressive, nurturing, supporting, loving pattern that you want to continue? Or has it been a downward spiral and it gets worse or doesn't change and you don't like the way it is. It's hard. It's painful, so on and so forth, because past patterns represent future patterns. What's happened in the past for the past few months usually represents what's going to happen in the next few months. What's happened in the past few years usually represents what's going to happen in the next few years. Not always. If you're working on yourselves, if you're doing a lot of introspection and personal growth and healing and working on the relationship as a whole, then the minute or big changes that you see could continue and help you both get into a better place in the relationship. So there is that. But look at the pattern. Has the pattern changed at all? Has it been the same? Most of the time, I'm going to say 95%+ of the time, when the pattern hasn't changed, it won't change. Whether it's a few months or a few years or many more years, when the pattern hasn't changed, it won't change. I have clients that I work with that continue to work on their relationship, and over the past year or two have noticed significant improvements in their relationship. And I look at their pattern of the past and notice that their past behaviors are no longer repeating. You know, because I kind of catch those behaviors and say, what you're doing here is causing a problem in the relationship. It is not supporting the relationship. It's not supporting the bigger picture, your overall happiness, your overall support, loving and nurturing of each other, your overall supporting of each other's paths. When that is not prevalent in the relationship, then we need to work on that and fix that. So when I see patterns that don't change, then we might have to dig a little further and find out exactly what's going on. And that's when it comes back to old emotional wounds, a lot of the times from childhood. So without further ado, what I'm going to do is read you these 20 things that might indicate that it's time to either call it quits or talk about it, work on it, try to fix it. Talking about it is the number one thing, of course. I mean, if you're listening to this show as a couple, then these 20 indications, I guess you could call them, would be excellent conversation starters. Like the first one, you have values that you're not in alignment with and maybe even completely opposite. Talk about a good conversation starter. One's Democrat, one's Republican, one's pro-life, one's pro-choice. I mean, these are probably deep values that you hold true to you and your partner holds true to them, and they may be immovable in those values or unchangeable or not open-minded enough to accept your values. And if that's the case, that's such a big, deep-level thing that you may never meet in the middle, and it will always be a point of contention. This person loves the hot, dry desert air of Arizona, and the other person loves the cold, humid winter air of Canada or something. And this could be a deep level thing that one person will always be unhappy because you never decide on a good place to live. And, you know, if that's a problem, that's probably going to continue being a problem until one of you comes to an acceptance that, hey, it's all right, I can get used to the climate, the environment, so on and so forth. So again, let's start this, and maybe you can compare what's going on in your life to these 20 signs that it might be time to call it quits. Are you ready? Number one, I just said it. It is, you have values that are not in alignment and maybe even completely opposite of your partner's. This isn't a deal breaker all the time, but it can cause a lot of strife, stress, and contention in a relationship. What is a value? A value is what is important to you. What is important to you about work? What is important to you about your job? What is important to you about your relationship? What is important to you about a partner? What is important to you about life? This is the big picture of many areas of your life that if you aren't in agreement at that big picture level, can cause problems. Doesn't always cause problems, but there can be issues that come up And if those issues aren't resolved or agreed upon, or at least agreed to disagree upon, then that could certainly be one of the signs that it might be time to call it quits. Now, don't take any of these as individual deal breakers. Just take them as if you have a combination of these, then you need to seriously consider what to do next in your relationship. And again, calling it quits doesn't mean you just end it. You might need to talk about it, which I recommend, or seek counseling, therapy, coaching, whatever you need to do if you want the relationship to continue. If not, then you can use these as part of your reasoning strategy to exit, if you want to do it that way. Number two is if you can't trust them. Yes, one of the signs or indications that it's time to call it quits is if you can't trust them. And one thing you can do to kind of test this out for yourself is ask, what would your life be like if you could trust your partner? What would life be like if I could trust my partner 100%? How would that feel inside? What would our life look like? And then ask yourself, do I think I'll ever feel this way? Because if you don't think you'll ever feel that way of 100% trust in your partner, or at least 99%, some big number, it should be big number, then it might be time to consider another step. Number three is they refuse to go to counseling with you. I think that's vital. If you're in a relationship and you say, you know what, I want to go to counseling, and your partner says, counseling, that's for losers. It's too late. If you're talking about going to counseling, then it's over anyway. I'm not going to counseling. If they're like that, they refuse to go to counseling, there's another sign, because counseling isn't a problem. It's part of a solution. And if your partner thinks that there is no problem and counseling is a waste of time, then by not even entertaining it, even for your sake, then there's less hope that any challenges will be fixed. All right, number four is they blame you for all the problems and take no responsibility for the role they play in the relationship. I've talked about this in emotionally abusive relationships, where it's all your fault. There's nothing wrong with me. It's all you. As soon as that there's nothing wrong with me comes into the picture, that's a problem. Because both people are part of a bigger equation. The equation involves both of you. Even if they're right and you're wrong, they're still part of the equation, because there wouldn't be an equation, i.e. there wouldn't be a problem, if they weren't in it. It's codependent dysfunction. Someone has a dysfunction, the other person is there to feed it. Even if the person feeding it is doing all the quote right things. When there's two people in the equation, they're both part of the equation, which means they're both part of the challenges, they're both part of the quote problems, and it's important that both people take responsibility for their role, even if they believe they're right. At least saying, hey, I know I have some responsibility in these challenges that we're having. So let's both look at this together and see where we can both improve, because there's always room for improvement on both sides. And if they choose not to take responsibility, then that's almost like saying, I don't care if the relationship is in the state it's in. It doesn't matter to me. I mean, this might be my own opinion, but I think that's what happens, is that, oh, there's a problem in the relationship? Well, you're the problem, not me. Ah, now I understand where you stand. You really don't care if I'm happy or not. You just want me to go take care of it, and you have no problem whatsoever, and then come back to you when I'm all fixed. Yeah, that's a problem. I think that needs to be addressed, and both people need to take responsibility for the role they play. All right, number five is they hide things from you. They lie, they deceive, or even cheat. They maybe even steal from you. If this is happening in your relationship, that's a sign. That's an issue that needs to be addressed. And if they can't stop, then you need to come to a place inside of you where you either accept that behavior, and I hope you don't, but you can if you want, or it needs to be corrected. It needs to be addressed. Talking about it or counseling or what have you. That's a big one. Number six is you have to hide things from them because you know it will upset them. I remember my first long-term girlfriend, her best friend said, I'm going to go to the beach. And my girlfriend's like, oh, you're going to take, I don't know what his name is, John, Rob, whatever. You're going to take him with you? And she's like, what? I would never tell him I'm going to the beach. He would get upset. I thought to myself, what? What does that even mean? He would get upset, so you're going to hide it from him? I mean, I don't think I asked her that, but I thought that inside. I'm like, I wouldn't want a relationship where I had to hide what I was doing from the person I'm supposed to feel the most safe and the most trusting and trusted by with. I wouldn't feel good not being able to express myself fully. So I see that as a sign that, hey, maybe this is a problem and it needs to be addressed. Number 7 is they talk down to you or about you with others. I think that's more important than a lot of people understand. I used to be this way. I used to talk down or make fun of the person I was with because it made me laugh. I joked about it. And when I met my wife and I started doing that, she was really offended. She really took offense to some of the things I was saying. I would maybe comment on some other woman like, oh, I might end up with her tonight, you know, as a stupid, immature joke. And she would say things like, why would you say that? And I had to stop and go, whoa, this is the first time I've been challenged for joking like this. And we had a talk about it. And I realized my behavior was not supportive of her in the relationship. So I figured out what I was doing. It took that wake-up call for me to go, oh, I'm putting someone I love down. And it was almost a passive-aggressive way to do it. So if I had any upset in me about what was going on in our lives, I might say something stupid like that. And she would feel it. But my girlfriends in the past never really said anything. They just do whatever they did. Maybe they mentioned something passive aggressively to me later on because they were ticked off about the joke I made about them or something like that. But that really started to enlighten me when my wife started telling me, wow, what you said really hurt. Or, wow, why would you say something so mean? And I didn't realize it was mean. It was just like that childhood humor that I brought into my adult relationships, that really wasn't functional. It was dysfunctional. So that's number 7. Number 8 is they get easily jealous and they want to track your every move. Or you get easily jealous and you want to track every move. That's another characteristic that I had in many of my relationships, is that I got jealous. I didn't want my girlfriend to leave the house without me. I didn't want her to go out with her friends without me. I just felt like I needed to be with them all the time. And I would get jealous if anybody took her time, which takes time away from me. That's a problem. That gets old fast. And that will wear the person down. And if you're not able to overcome that, heal from that, or if they're not able to overcome that or heal from that, that becomes a bigger issue and will not go away and will lead to the downfall of the relationship. Number 9 is they're willing to change for you, but not for themselves. I'll do anything for you. Please don't leave me. But they won't change for themselves. When they change for themselves, that's when self-realization, self-empowerment, self-enlightenment comes along. When they change for you, as soon as you're not in the picture anymore, they go back to the way they were. And that's so vital because that puts all the pressure on you to always be there for them to continue being the way you want them to be, if that made any sense. But the idea is if they pursue it on their own and you like the changes you see, that's long lasting. Those are the kind of changes that stick. Self-initiated change is the most powerful change because then it's not reliant on someone else to be there or not to be there. Like I have one client who has made a lot of changes in his life and his partner is noticing these changes and she's like, wow, maybe I don't want to leave this relationship or maybe I want to think twice about it because he initiated those changes in himself knowing that, hey, that's taking responsibility, isn't it? This is something I need to do for me. This is something that if I don't take care of this, it's going to appear in any relationship that I'm in. So I need to take care of this. This is something I need to improve in myself. Number 10, the sex is stale or selfish, which might even be along the same lines or worse, is that the sex that you have together is, I don't know, I don't want to say repetitive, but just not enjoyable, at least for one of you. And it's usually not enjoyable because of selfishness. If your partner is into it for you, it's enjoyable. If your partner is into it for themselves, that's okay too. But if it's only for themselves, then that's when it becomes, typically, becomes stale. So that's why it's important to have good quality reciprocal sex. Unselfish, wanting your partner to be happy. And yes, that may involve spending a little extra time making sure your partner is happy in that area. I won't get any deeper than that, but I think you know where I'm going. When it becomes selfish and it's all about one person, then that's going to get old. And one of you is going to have thoughts of, well, you know, is this going to be the way it is for the rest of my life? Is this how sex is going to be? I don't know if I want this. That might be one of the signs to call it quits. If that can't change, if you talk it out and it won't change, or you go to therapy or counseling, it won't change, then maybe that might be one of the signs to call it quits. All right, number 11 is you show signs of emotional abuse, like, and this is a big one, being made to feel guilty a lot. If your partner makes you feel guilty more often than not, or all the time, that is a major red flag of emotional abuse. And unless that changes, that really paves the way to escape that kind of relationship. If you're made to feel guilty, most of the time it's because your partner doesn't want to feel any emotional pain or strain, so they push all the pain and strain onto you. And as long as you feel guilty, you'll stay in the relationship out of guilt. That's no way. I mean, again, use that fallback question. If this is how it is for the rest of our lives, will it be okay? Because if not, it might be time. Number 12, all of your friends and family hate your partner. Now, this isn't always 100%. Some people just don't understand your partner. But it is a sign of something. Something's there. Everyone hates your partner but you? That makes you wonder, what are you blind to? That may not be true. I mean, you may not be blind to anything. You may be the only one who sees your partner the way other people don't see them. But try to ask your friends and family that don't like your partner exactly why. And stay open-minded and figure out what they see that you don't see. Because there might be something there. Now, number 13 is very similar in an opposite direction, which is all of your friends and family love your partner. But you know they can't see what you see in him or her. That's very typical, again, of emotionally abusive relationships, is that your partner gets along with everyone wonderfully, but he or she is subtly abusing you in the relationship, and you can't pinpoint how they're doing it, or you can't figure out exactly how to explain what's happening to your friends and family. They just see them as the most wonderful person in the world, but you see a different side of them. And again, you might feel guilty a lot. You might feel responsible for all the problems in the relationship. And they might point the finger at you as the person who's causing all the problems in the relationship. That's definitely a sign of emotional abuse. Number 14 is they embarrass you. My stepfather embarrassed me for the 20 years that I lived at home. He embarrassed my mom. He embarrassed our entire family. Every time we went out, as soon as he finished his first alcoholic drink, he would become embarrassing. I remember a specific incident that I won't mention because it's kind of a personal thing that happened between my wife and I when I was married. But we were over a couple friends' house, and she did something that totally embarrassed me. Now, fortunately, she didn't do it all the time. If she did, then I would definitely have considered, I don't know, getting help, calling it quits or something. But it embarrassed me, and I was just appalled, I guess, that it was happening. And so that's just one incident, fortunately. But if it happened over and over again, it might be a consideration. Like, I don't like to be embarrassed. I want to be proud of the person I'm with. I want to show off the person I'm with, not hide in shame or fear that someone's going to look at us and go, what is wrong with you two? Or what is wrong with your partner? So I think it's important to not feel ashamed or embarrassed to be with the one that you're supposed to feel happy and proud to be with. That's another sign. Number 15 is you want an emotional connection and they can't give you one. This is a massive problem. I've seen this over and over again with many couples where one is more emotional and the other one is like an analytical machine, like I mentioned earlier, is that when I turned into that analytical machine because I didn't want to deal with my emotions, it was a lot easier to go through life. However, because we're emotional creatures by design, that doesn't really promote a healthy, long-lasting relationship. So if you have someone in your life that wants that emotional connection, but you're rigid and you're going to talk about your emotions analytically, and you'll say things like, well, one can feel hurt and sad. One can do this. One can feel the pain of breaking up. And you're talking almost in third person, so disconnected from emotions that the other person just can't relate to you because they're using I feel statements. I feel so in love with you, or I feel so much pain because you can't connect with me. When you're on polar opposites like that, it just doesn't work. I mean, I've never seen that work. And almost always, the emotionally disconnected person kind of has to come back and meet the emotional person somewhere in the middle. Because the emotional person's already there. He or she is already trying to connect at the emotional level. But the emotionally disconnected person, for whatever reason, they're emotionally disconnected, whether it's pain from the past or they weren't allowed to express their emotions or whatever, they have trouble connecting with the emotional person because they don't want to express or feel what's going on inside of them, or a multitude of reasons why that could happen. But that's just a warning sign. That can be discussed, that can be talked about, and hopefully you can meet somewhere in the middle at that emotional level so that you can have a relationship. Otherwise, where's the intimacy? Where's the true bonding that can take place? You don't want just a relationship of convenience. Well, it's convenient to have my partner around. They do the dishes. They do the laundry. They make me dinner when I get home. I'm using a man's voice, but they could be any voice. But the idea is that you want to connect at that deeper emotional level. And, you know, some people have a hard time doing that. And that's why self-initiated counseling, helping yourself, therapy, whatever, is a good way to go to understand why I can't connect with these emotions. There's nothing wrong with you if that's the case. It's just, it typically starts off as a protective mechanism or a conditioned response from childhood. Okay, we're getting down to the last four. Number 17, you feel as if you have to convince yourself that your partner or your relationship is good for you. Now, this is a little tricky one, but I've heard people talk about their partner and say things like, well, I love my partner. He's right for me. He's the one I married, and that's the one I'm going to stick with. I love him. To me, that sounds like you're just trying to convince yourself. It's like, nope, this is the decision I made, and I'm going to stick with it. It's not like, oh, when I think about my partner, he's such a good person, or she's such a good person. She's kind in every way. She just wants me to be happy. And that's a lot different than, nope, I'm married to him, and I'm loyal to the end. Just sounds like maybe you're trying to convince yourself more than anyone else. So that might be something you want to be aware of. Number 18, you love them, but you're not in love with them. Now, I could go either way with this one. I mean, I think about older people that find a companion, or anyone that finds a companion, and they just love being with them. They just love them in all the ways you can love someone, but they're not in love with them. Whatever that means to you is being in love. So this is something you have to consider. Is this something, is loving them enough? Or is being in love with them enough. I think being in love is that extra boost that keeps longevity, that helps bonding, that really pushes people closer together. And loving someone is more of a, well, I could leave them anytime. I love them either way. You know, there's a different feeling. There's a different vibe. Maybe I should talk about love and in love on a show one day, but you get the idea. It's like you can love a friend, but to love the person that you want to spend the rest of your life with the same way, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, it can go either way with that. It's just a consideration. It's a sign, a possibility. It's just something to talk about if you want to talk about that. That might be a tricky subject to bring up. But if you're listening together, maybe you can talk about that. Are you in love with me? And that could lead to some heavy conversation. So be careful with that one. Because if you're happy together and then suddenly this ruins everything, don't tell me about it. I don't want to be responsible for that. Of course, it doesn't mean it's going to ruin your life. It just means that this relationship may not survive a conversation like that, especially if someone's not in love. So don't ask questions you don't want to know the answer to. Just warning you. Number 19 is they have a behavior or mannerism that you can't stand that does not appear to be going away anytime soon. This is very similar to number 14, they embarrass you. But, you know, this behavior may not embarrass you. You just can't stand it. I don't like it. I don't like when you smoke. Even though you smoke outside, you come in and you smell like smoke. I can't stand it. I don't like when you drink. I don't like when you bite your nails and then put them on the coffee table. I don't, you know, there are many things that people do, many little nuances that we all have. We all have these little nuances. But if they bug the crap out of you, that's just one of those extra things that add to the number of indications that yeah, maybe it's time to talk about it or call it quits. Again, these are not absolute. You add them all up. Like if you have more yeses than nos in this list, then it's definitely time to talk or get help. But it doesn't mean that a single one is the reason to end the relationship. And finally, number 20 is, and this is just a big picture, you're unhappy more than you're happy. It's a good gauge, isn't it? You can look at your life with your partner and go, have I been unhappy more than I've been happy? Or is the pattern that I'm unhappy more than I'm happy? Because if the pattern is that, it's likely not going to change unless you see improvements over the past few weeks or few years. Even past few days is sometimes hopeful, but I like to look at least weeks and months to see if the pattern is going to change. Patterns can change. You can become happier, but sometimes they don't, and you just have to be aware of that. So if you look at your life today and go, all right, is the level of happiness I'm experiencing now, if that's the way it is for the rest of our lives, will I be okay with it? If not, it's something to consider. It's something to talk about. Or if yes, and there's a lot of other yeses from this list I just read, then it's time to do something about it. It's time to take bigger steps to either save your relationship or plan an exit strategy. I hate to sound so cold, but that's kind of what happens. You plan your exit strategy because you probably want to go without making too much of a dramatic thoroughfare out of it. You don't want to hurt people's feelings, or I don't know, maybe you do. But the idea is just to honor yourself, honor the relationship, do the best you can for the relationship, be the best you can for the relationship for your partner. And if you're unable to bring that in, or they're unable to bring their best qualities into the relationship, or their best qualities aren't enough, that's when it's time to get help, talk about it, or call it quits. Kind of a cold subject to talk about, but we got to talk about the cold subjects every now and then, because sometimes you're in a situation that maybe you do want to change and you needed the right impetus, the right information to do so. And change can be very good. Sometimes it's not fun to go through, but the lessons learned along the way that you can take into every situation in the future are huge. We'll be right back and I'll read an email for the Ask Paul segment coming up. Well, the first time I mentioned StoryWorth was back in, a December episode of The Overwhelmed Brain? It was at that time I gave the StoryWorth gift to my younger sister. I asked her, hey, I want to send you something very unique that'll help you share your story and leave your legacy. And she's like, what? I said, it's a gift that will help you share your life with others in a very memorable way. She said, what's the catch? Are you trying to sell me an MLM? And I'm like, no, it's not an MLM. It's a gift. It's called StoryWorth. What's StoryWorth? It's a new way to bring the family together. It's a conversation starter because it's your story. The basic premise behind it is that the recipient of the gift answers one question a week for a year. There's also an option to tell their story over the phone for those who don't like to type. At the end of the year, and this is the coolest part, all of the stories are bound in a beautiful hardcover book to share with anyone who wants to know them better. Not only that, you can upload photos from your life so that those end up in the book too. I mean, imagine opening a hardcover book of your mom or dad's life, or maybe a grandparent or a sister or a brother, and learn things that you never knew about them. Now, it's cool because I get a copy of the questions that my sister receives every week, and I'm really enthralled by her answers because I didn't know half the stuff that she's gone through. It's fun when she mentions things that I remember that I was a part of, but I think I get more excited when she mentions me. I mean, it's kind of cool. She just said, my brother Paul. And I go, that's me. And I learned things about her that I never knew. And I learned what she was going through at different periods of her life and our life together. Now, if you've been listening to the show a while, you probably know a lot about me. Now, imagine knowing that much or more about someone in your family because you gave them this gift. I mean, I can't wait to read my sister's StoryWorth book. There was so much I was a part of in her life. So the book is going to be a blast when she gets it. So I want you to get StoryWorth for someone special in your life. This is a unique, one-of-a-kind gift that I know will be perfect for that special person in your life. Help someone keep the stories they tell forever. Help them create a legacy. Give the gift of family connection and lively discussion topics and get ready for some powerful, emotional conversations. The book will have a life of its own and can be passed down into the generations. Go to storyworth.com/brain and get $20 off your subscription today. My sister is loving the process, and I know my girlfriend's mom is going to love this gift too. Again, storyworth.com/brain for your $20 off. And remember to use the promo code word brain when checking out, because I want you to get this deal. Give the gift that keeps your loved ones engaged for an entire year. Welcome back to Ask Paul. This is where I read a listener email on the air and do my best to help them through a challenge. We don't have much time left, so I'm just going to read through this very quickly and then give you my assessment. I mean, it's an important topic, don't get me wrong. It definitely deserves some attention. But the gist of the email is this woman wrote to me. I'm going to call her Sandy. And Sandy says that her brother has become quite reliant on her over the years. And she's become more of a mom than their mom could be because she passed away some time ago. So her brother has become dependent on her and sees her as the parental role model that he didn't have as a child. So they're both adults now, and she has her own kids, her own place, and her brother's lived with her in the past, and he wants to do it again. But she's starting to reject some of the things that he wants, because it's infringing on her lifestyle. She wants him to be more independent. She wants him to, you know, make his own money and find his own way in life, which is perfectly reasonable. When you become an adult, that's typically the path that you want to take. Find your own way. I mean, if you're physically and mentally capable of doing so. And it sounds like he is. But he has this dependency that he's developed on her. And it doesn't help that she has been quite the people pleaser a lot of her life, and she even feels guilty when she can't find a way to help someone through a challenge that they're having. Sounds like something I'd say, helping you through a challenge. But she takes it to an extreme where if she can't help, she feels bad. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. If you want to help people and it makes you feel good to help people, great. If you want to help someone and you can't help them, you shouldn't necessarily feel bad. But I understand how it can happen. So she goes on to say, life has turned me into an empathetic fixer. She's experienced a lot of isolation and pain, and she tries to make sure people feel supported when they're going through something. But now that she's been rejecting her brother is starting to reject her, and to her it's painful. He's ignoring her calls, or he's coming up with excuses why he's not going to come over to eat or to visit with her, and it's really bothering her. And she's wondering if this is manipulation on his part, which is a good observation. It very well could be. But she wants to know how she can make peace about a decision that she made to kind of force more independence in him that seems to have caused a rift in their relationship. She says, people often say, let it go. But what does that even mean? And how do you do that? And how do you leave the guilt that comes with it behind? So, Sandy, thank you for writing. Thank you for sharing this. And this is an interesting dilemma. So this is how I want you to approach it. First of all, if you are the mom, moms have that tough love option, which is something it sounds like you're doing. You're showing tough love. Hey, in order for you to develop independence, you need to go out on your own. You can't just rely on me and move back in every time you need a place to move in. And I mean, yes, you can do that. But you have your own children, your own life, your own bills. And unless he's paying rent and he has his own kitchen and bathroom and things like that, and it's totally separate from the house, it can become intrusive. It can feel like you're being infringed upon. Your privacy's not there. You can't even bring home a date maybe because it's going to be a little weird for them to see that your brother's living with you. You know, I don't know your entire situation, but you want him to move on. And you also, from the gist I get from your letter, you don't want to be the mother to him anymore. You want him to be independent, and you have every right to feel that way because you're both old enough, and I'm not going to say your ages because I could be talking about anyone, right? But I want to protect your privacy just in case someone you know is listening. But the whole point is you want your brother to live an adult life and take care of himself and then have a relationship as, like you said, a brother-sister relationship. Family member. So yes, step one, tough love. You got that part down. Step two, what do I do with this guilt? How do I let it go? I don't think it's a matter of letting it go. I think it's a matter of, first of all, looking at the big picture, like, why am I doing this? Oh yes, this will help him develop independence. And when you're in the mom role, sometimes you have to do things that your kids will disagree with in order for them to take the right path in life. And sometimes that doesn't work out. I mean, if you're a parent, you know what I'm talking about. You don't make it easy for your kids, so they learn the right lessons, and hopefully they learn the right lessons, and then they do the right things, and then they're happier. And sometimes that doesn't work. So you never know what's going to work and what's not. You can only do the best you can. But you look at your life and you go, okay, what's the priority here? The priority here is I can either feed him a fish every day or teach him to fish so he can go out on his own and learn to feed himself and make his own life. But then there's the guilt, like you said, Sandy. The guilt comes because now I'm denying him and I've never done that. And I'm a fixer person. I like to fix the situation, but here I am feeling guilty because I'm not fixing it. And it sounds like he might be in pain or he might be mad at me. Well, I don't know if I said this recently on a patron episode or a regular episode, but the idea of wanting to help someone that might be displaying some sort of dysfunction, like a reliance on you as a mom figure instead of a connection with you as a sister. If you feed into that and stay the mom figure, it continues to be a detriment to him and you. It continues to feed into the system that kept him where he was. That's the tough love aspect of letting this go. That's what it means to let it go, is to go, if I continue doing what I was doing, I'm actually harming him. I'm actually harming our relationship. I'm actually creating a scenario that will cause us both to be unhappy eventually. Because eventually you'll get so fed up with it and you'll explode. And he'll be like, what is wrong with you? I thought we were getting along great. You provide me a room, you provide me food and shelter. Everything is good on my side. What's wrong with you? So you came up with the tough decisions that you've had to make in order to allow him to find his independence. So now he goes out into the world and it's tough for him and he's learning the hard way. Like, oh, it's just so much easier to come back to the nest and stay at the nest where I'm protected and I'm safe. And that's where the guilt comes in. It's like, I know I can protect him. I know he can feel safe. But are you going to do that for the rest of your life? No. I mean, you know this. I'm not saying anything that you don't know. You've made the decision that this is how it has to be. So here's what you do with the guilt. When you are compassionate for someone's plight, then you do everything you can for their best interest and at the same time honor yourself in the process. Because you can look at someone's life and love them for who they are and be compassionate for their plight, for their situation, and want to see them succeed and help them out in ways that you can until you're helping them out too much, when it's no longer compassion because it turns into enabling. You don't want compassion to turn into enabling. So this is how the guilt starts to diminish, is that you feel good that you're not enabling him. Now, that doesn't eradicate the guilt completely, or it might for you, I don't know. But when I try that on, I don't feel it eradicating the guilt completely. The guilt comes with, I've always helped him. I mean, this is where I go with it. I've always helped him, and now he's reaching out for help, and I'm not there to help. What does that make me? What kind of person am I that won't help my little brother? When I try that on, yeah, that's harder. That does hurt. That does feel like, wow, I must be doing something wrong. I must be doing something bad. Where I go with that is direct honesty. I go to a place of, I don't want you to be dependent on me. You're old enough. You're an adult now. I want to love you as my brother, not my son. I want us to be friends, to hang out together. I want to go over to your house and chat and eat, and you can come over to my house and chat and eat, and we both have our own separate lives that we can share with each other. But I don't want to create a dependency where you're relying on me every time you get into trouble, because that makes me feel like you don't respect me and my family and my personal space. It makes me feel like you don't care. And he might respond, what do you mean I don't care? Of course I care. I love you more than anything. Which you could respond, then why wouldn't you honor me honoring my family? Why wouldn't you honor my request, my wishes, and realize that I'm doing what's best for me, yet I still love you, and I still want you to succeed, and I'll do everything I can to help you become more independent so you don't have to rely on anyone. I want you to have a good life and have you as my brother. Because I'm willing to bet that some of the guilt that you feel is some unspoken stuff. Some of the stuff that you won't say to him, that you think might hurt him. And instead of risking hurting him, you choose to repress it in yourself and hurt yourself. So you feel guilty. You carry it with you. And as long as it's never expressed, you will always feel that bad feeling, that guilt, or anything else that's in there. But becoming direct, saying, you know, I don't want you living with me because I can't afford you. Or I don't want you living with me because as a mom, I have to take care of my own kids and I want to be your sister, not your mom. I'm already a mom. And if he is manipulating you, he will say things like, well, if you were really my sister, you would do this. I mean, that's a classic manipulation technique. If you really loved me, you would do this. If you really cared about me, you would do this. And it's possible he's using that. And manipulators will often make you feel guilty, like I was talking about in the last segment. They use guilt, especially with emotionally sensitive people like yourself. They use that against you. They use your kindness and generosity and compassion against you because if you feel guilty enough, you'll eventually submit to their demands. What prevents them from continuing that dysfunction is when you stop giving into their demands, and now they have to face themselves. Now they have to either adapt to their environment instead of making their environment or you adapt to them, or they're going to make someone else conform. They might have to, unfortunately, emotionally abuse someone else to meet their needs instead of meeting their own needs. So your brother does have some healing to do, and it may involve a vacation away from each other. It may involve a hiatus where you don't see each other, but you always have the door open for that sisterly love that you can offer. Sisterly love is a lot different than motherly love. I mean, for the most part, that's how it works. Sisters and brothers hopefully get along as friends, except they're close friends, they're blood, they're family, but mom and dad are different entities. And it's unfortunate that your mom died at a young age and he didn't have that motherly role model, but a good mom will teach independence. And maybe his independence should have been taught a long time ago, and maybe you couldn't do that. Maybe you've been fixing for so long and wanting to help him for so long that he got used to it. Because I guarantee you, someone who's used to someone else serving them all the time and fixing their problems and cleaning their life up is going to be damn used to it and does not want it to end. And that's an unfortunate reality, is that once you get used to that lifestyle, you don't want it to end. And you're going to do anything you can to keep it, even if that means guilting you so that they can get it back. Because eventually, if you had never considered this, you would eventually give in to your own guilt and say, all right, you can move back in, but only temporarily. And you know as well as I do that temporarily doesn't work until some miracle comes along and he finds someone that he's in love with, and then he moves out again, and then you're changing the locks. Don't come back. It's really hard to do business with family. Not that that's business, but you know what I mean. It's kind of like if you loan a family member $1,000 and they never pay it back, how do you approach it? How do you keep saying, hey, you owe me this money, without affecting the relationship? It usually affects the relationship. Money between family, giving up a part of your home can feel like a violation, can hurt family ties. All of that stuff can definitely affect relationships. But where I want you to go, because your question is how do you let it go, is to realize that you're the captain of the ship and you have to make hard decisions and people will get hurt. That's not easy, especially for someone emotionally sensitive. But you step into a leadership role and you look at what's most important. What is most important? I tell you what, I bet you your kids are pretty damn important. You probably want them to have healthy relationships where, yes, they can show compassion and they can help others, but in a healthy way where it's not draining, because people pleasers drain themselves by pleasing others to their own emotional deficit, where they just can't help anymore and then they feel burnt out, which is probably where you got to, is if you help too much, you get burnt out. So one of your main priorities is, yes, your children. Another main priority is, yes, you. Compassion for self first before compassion for others. And anyone who loves you and wants you to be happy will honor you honoring yourself, will honor you wanting compassion for yourself first. That doesn't mean he doesn't love you. That doesn't mean he doesn't honor you. It just means that this is the stance you go inside of you, so that when the conversation comes up, you might have to say, don't you support me making my own choices? Or is this really about you and you don't really care about the choices I make? I mean, you don't have to say it that way and you don't have to say those words, but this is the kind of bigger picture that I want you to keep in mind, is that someone who really cares about you is going to honor your choices. So that big picture is, hey, do you really care about me? And the answer you'll probably get is, of course I care. I just need help. And that's when you remember the ship that you're steering, that has your kids, that has your house, that has your life. And you realize, hey, I can steer the ship back over the waterfall and hope we survive. Or I can stay on course and show him some tough love with a little lifeboat or something. I mean, this is a very similar thing that I did with one of my family members who wanted to borrow money. I lovingly said no, and I said that I loved her very much, and I wanted to keep the relationship that we had without involving money. It was hard. I felt bad. She tried to make me feel a little guilty when I wouldn't give it to her, but it's what I established. You have to establish a precedent. You have to let the other person know, this is where I stand. Will you support me in that? If they say, no, I will not support you, then that is their choice. If that person will not support you, then some of the guilt can be alleviated then too, because now you know where they stand. If they're like, no, my needs are more important than yours, now you know where they stand. It may not be easy to hear, because they may say something like that. I mean, probably not those words. But at least you know where they stand, and that helps you make easier decisions. Wow, if that's where you stand, then I guess you really don't care about me, my family, my needs. I mean, that's a little harsh, but you get the idea. So, Sandy, I would see this as not a rejection, but a game. Because that's the game that people play. When somebody wants you to feel bad, wants you to feel guilty, it's because they're trying to have their needs met by you. They don't want to find another way to meet their needs. They want to drain you and make you feel bad for not meeting their needs. That's tough for an emotionally sensitive person to deal with, because it's all about the exploitation of your emotions. And it may not even be intentional. He may not even know he's doing it. He just feels down, and he really lays it on so that maybe you'll feel so bad for him that you'll finally give in. But giving in is what exacerbates and repeats the cycle and the pattern, and he never gets anywhere. So what do you do from this point on? You stay his sister. You show up with an apple pie. You say, I miss you. I want to have a relationship with you. And then when he brings up, I just want to live with you again, you stand firm saying, you know, I don't want that for us. I want to have a brother. I want to be your best friend. I want to hang out together. But I don't want this to be a dependent relationship where you depend on me for your basic needs. This is not how it is anymore. We're growing up. You're an adult. I'm an adult. This is the kind of relationship I want. And if he rejects you at that point, I don't want to have a relationship with you because you're a big meanie. Then you still show up as that loving, kind person you are and as the sister that you want to be. Because he might try to play this game a few times, but if you keep showing up with that proverbial apple pie, whatever that is, hey, I just wanted to stop by. I was in the neighborhood, wanted to see how you're doing. I'm okay. I'm down. Well, I'm here if you ever want to talk, because I'm your sister. Establish that precedent. Establish who you are and who you want to stay and be in your relationship with him. If that's never established, then the guilt will stem from all these other feelings of holding back, of everything unspoken. But once it's out there, the ball is in his court. He will have the option. He will have the choice to make to want to have a relationship with his sister and not his surrogate mother. I hope this helps you, Sandy. Thank you so much for writing. Send me an update. I want to know what happens. And thanks for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. We'll be right back. I'll thank some people and say some closing words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank the reviewer in iTunes who called themselves Sparkle Mills. I appreciate that review. Thank you so much. And I want to thank Storyworth. Go to storyworth.com/brain and get $20 off the gift of someone's life. Their stories deserve to be told and bound in a beautiful hardcover book. Visit storyworth.com/brain and use the code word brain when checking out for that discount. I also want to thank members of the TOB Patron Program. You know, this show is sort of like a NPR in the sense that it's listener-supported. And there's even more TOB at patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com if you become a member of the Patron Program. Not only is that a great way to show how much you value the show, but you get episodes you've never heard and worksheets you've never seen, and even email coaching, where you can reach out anytime, share your challenge with me, and get my insights and opinions faster than I answer any other email in my inbox. Visit patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com today for a lot more TOB and a chance to say thank you. And whether you're a patron or not, I want to thank you if you've purchased the Overwhelmed Brain book. It's the A to Z of self-empowerment. I tell you how to get there, no matter where you are in life. And when you're buying the book, use the Amazon link at the website, theoverwhelmedbrain.com. The Amazon link is the easiest way to give back, so if you're not into that whole patron thingy, just use the Amazon link every time you shop. Thank you to those that do this already. You know who you are. Your shopping habits are making a difference. Thank you. And finally, a big thank you to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And my closing words, I'm going to tell you all about the meaning of life. Except maybe in a way that you've probably not heard before. I was just talking to a client regarding this a few days ago, where, you know, sometimes life gets to a point where it just doesn't have much purpose left. I mean, have you ever felt this way? What am I doing with my life? Where is my life going? What's the point? I've felt this way several times in my life, where I just go, what's the point? And I've come to the conclusion that meaning and purpose come to your life when you define the boundaries of your life. Now, hear me out. Boundaries as in personal boundaries. Not only do you define your personal boundaries, but you honor them. Now, let me tell you what this is all about. And this is the same analogy I used in my coaching session with this client. I said, you know how a dog enters a new home and he's learning about the new home and, you know, he's sniffing around the house trying to figure out where the boundaries are of the house. And he's getting to know the people that live in the home and figuring out who everyone is, what's their role. Well, one of the things that a dog does when he enters a home is he looks for a pack leader. Like, who runs the show here? Who is the disciplinarian? Who is the authority in this home? Because that's the person I'm going to listen to. And that's the person that's going to define the structure in my life. When the pack leader's around, I know what to do. I do exactly what the pack leader says, and I follow the rules, and guess what? I'm happy because of it. I learned this from reading Cesar Millan's book on how to communicate with dogs, is that dogs will look for a pack leader in any group of dogs or people. The problem is when they don't find a pack leader and everyone wants to be the dog's best friend, they have no structure, they have no organization, and now they're just best friends with everybody, or they could be possessive to one person, which happens too. And there's all kinds of things that could happen when there's no clearly defined pack leader. But one of the things that happens is that a dog can develop anxiety. It can start peeing on the floor. It can start barking when you're not home. It can do all kinds of neurotic behavior because there's no structure in the dog's life. And when there's no structure, the dog doesn't know what to do. It actually goes into some, I'm going to say it even though it's not true, bipolar mode, where it has to become the pack leader and the best friend to everyone that's in the house. And that can be difficult for some dog breeds, is that they don't know how to be both. So they act, the word Caesar uses is neurotic. They act neurotic. But when there's a clearly defined pack leader, one who makes the rules, one who maybe takes dog training classes and knows how to show discipline to the dog and create structure for the dog becomes safe and comfortable and knows what to do. And this is something that I liken to our lives too, is that when we don't have clear structure in our life, we have less meaning. We have less purpose. We feel like, what's the point? There's less structure in the sense of defining our own boundaries, defining our sense of self. How do you define your sense of self? You start honoring your boundaries. You start honoring yourself. And if you think, well, I don't even know who myself is. Well, I guarantee that you know what you want and what you don't want in your life. And those are your rules. Those are your boundaries. And when you start honoring what you do and what you don't want in life, and you're clear to others what you will accept and what you won't accept, that's how your sense of self starts to get defined. That's how purpose starts to get defined. That's how meaning starts to get defined in your life, is by stepping up and honoring yourself. So when someone is disrespecting you and you won't accept that, or you don't like it, and previously you didn't say anything and just swallowed those negative emotions, instead of doing that, you might stand up and go, you know what? I don't like being disrespected. You have no right to disrespect me. I want you to back off. Whoa. Imagine doing that. Or maybe you do that. And the more you do things like that, the more you honor yourself, the more you honor your boundaries, the more the structure of you is defined, the more of your foundation you create. Because you know what? There's nothing better than having a solid foundation to return to inside yourself. When it's not solid, when it's unstable, when people can cross your boundaries and walk all over you, then there's less meaning in life. There's less purpose. You feel hopeless. And I don't want you to feel that way. I want you to be able to stand up for yourself and honor yourself and respect yourself and be a person that is in alignment with their values and be a person that honors their boundaries, because by not doing so, you take away meaning, you take away purpose, you take away that sense of self. And suddenly, what do you have left? It doesn't feel very good. So I want you to keep that in your open mind and step into your power. And be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You know, you are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.